HIV STD prevention program specifically developed for women who have sex with men. First, I want to acknowledge the people that have helped me along the way, because they certainly have added so much. My colleagues at ISA, Roy Cook and Rebecca Hirsch, consultants. I know a member of Gina Wingood's team is going to speak to you in just a second. She was helpful. She's been a consultant. And you see the rest of the folks there. I especially want to thank NIDA for funding this project. Well, actually, Dr. Gomez covered a lot of this ground, so I can just, well, maybe I'll catch us up by sneaking through this really early. Why did I focus on HIV prevention with women? Well, early in the epidemic, women were relatively few diagnosed cases, 14% in 1992 of people with HIV were women. We fast forward to 2004, of the people who were diagnosed with HIV/AIDS, it's now jumped up to 27%. But that number is sort of misleading. I actually think you need to delve into that number a little bit more. And if you delve into that number, and Dr. Gomez and the other speakers have already talked about this, even though African-American women and Latinas make up about 25% of the population of women, they account for roughly 75 to 80% of new cases. And so you can actually see that here. Sorry, this slide is a little busy. But you can see the overrepresentation of African-American and Latinas. The other really interesting thing about this, and this was mentioned before, is, well, how are women contracting HIV? For men, the biggest cause is men who have sex with men. For women, it's actually heterosexual contact. You see there, for African-American women, from 2001 to 2004, it was 78%, and the numbers are largely the same when we look at the other groups. So what that tells us is that women face unique prevention challenges. And that's what I wanted to address here. Well, let me start off with some good news. We know that HIV prevention works. We've heard some really exciting talks about some different ways that we can prevent HIV. But one of the things that we know time and time again, that merely possessing information is not enough. I can't hand someone a pamphlet and say, hey, go make sure you use a condom. Because oftentimes if you ask people, they already know that. What we need to do is give theoretically driven, with personalized, tailored risk assessments, those are the interventions that are most effective. We also know from the research literature that you can simultaneously target men and women, and it'll work for both men and women. But the most effective programs for women are specifically designed for gender-specific issues. Let me just give you two examples. Why is that? Well, think about it. What is our main prevention weapon? It's consistent use of the male latex condom. But for a man, putting on a condom is a behavior. For a woman, it's a goal. So if you're going to help women use a latex condom in their relationships more, you need to include condom negotiations. Men don't need to negotiate with themselves, but a woman needs to negotiate with a man to put on a condom. So prevention training for women needs to include condom negotiation, problem-solving skills. The theories, which are powerful, that underlie most of our models, these social cognitive theories, also tend to ignore the dyadic nature of these relationships. So one example would be there's oftentimes power differentials and there's coercion involved in sexual relationships. Well, those aren't often accounted for in our models. And so what we need to include is also alternative risk reduction strategies. And I think we've already talked about a little bit about that today. So including training on partner selection. I probably should have written safe sexual refusal and enhancing the value of outer course. And finally, cultural issues are important. We know from the research literature that higher ethnic identity is related to higher self-esteem, which is then related to fewer instances of sexual risk-taking. Let me give you two examples of some interventions that I think are illustrative of what I'm talking about here. One is by DiClemente and Wingood. They developed a prevention program specifically targeting African-American adolescent girls. It involved four-hour group sessions. You see some of the things that they worked on, ethnic and gender pride, HIV risk reduction strategies, negotiating safer sex. Bottom line, consistent condom use increased at 6 months and was maintained at 12 months. Another interesting study was done by St. Lawrence and her colleagues. What I find interesting about this is she wanted to investigate, well, what happens if I developed an HIV prevention technique that didn't really use the models that we used, didn't include all the skill-based training? What if I just focused on a socio-political theory of gender? And that's what she did. She had one group that was a control group. She had another group that was the standard social cognitive models that worked on communication and condom use skills. There was another group of women that didn't do any of that. They talked about, it was based on something called the theory of gender and power, and they talked about some of these things. We've talked about coercion and the relationships between men and women. Outcome, when they looked at what happened, St. Lawrence found that, indeed, the social cognitive group improved on measures you'd expect them to. Their communication improved, their condom use skills improved. But when you actually look at behavior, what did they do afterwards? The social cognitive theory group, again, was better than control. But what was interesting is the group that didn't have any of that skill-based activities that was just based solely on theory of gender and power, they also, those women also increased their condom use. And there was no difference between the theory of gender and power group and the social cognitive models. So what that suggests is there is different ways to get to this end point, and that is consistent use of condoms. So, based on all that, we initiated a program that was going to be web-based. And so how we did this is, one, we looked at scientific literature. I'm good at doing that. We had expert consultants. Probably the key thing was going to the target audience first. So it's no surprise that I'm a white guy, and I'm developing a program for women of color. So one of the first things I did that was by far the most important thing I could have done is I went and talked to women before I started developing anything and asked them really simple questions like, what would you like to see in a prevention program? What are some of the issues that you're facing? This is what the literature is telling me, but tell me what you're facing. And then simple questions. What color scheme should be on the program? Should there be music or not music? What should the narrator sound like? Those are all things that I had ideas about what I thought would be important, but talking to the target audience turned out that my ideas many times were dumb. I talked to the software development team a lot because I'm not a technical person, and so I would say, this is what I want it to look like, and they would go build it. And then I also spoke to STD clinic directors around the country. The program that hopefully I'll be able to show you is the core of it is formed around Project Respect. If you don't know some of the elements of Project Respect, it involves personalized risk assessment, identification of risk reduction barriers. What is it that's preventing a woman from engaging in safer sexuality? Enhancement of condom attitudes, development of personalized strategies. The program that we're developing includes all of that. It also includes these three key additions: the woman-focused prevention skills, which I've already talked to you about; the treatment and prevention of STDs beyond HIV. We know that women who have STDs, not including HIV, are two to five times more likely to develop HIV. So there's a section of the program that will focus on that. And then finally, exercises designed to enhance ethnic and gender identity. Hopefully I'm going to show you the program here, so I'm going to skip past this because I want to actually show you the dog and pony show if I can. So after we developed this, and this is a prototype. This was funded by NIDA in a Phase 1 SBIR, and for those people who aren't familiar with SBIRs, the Phase 1 is only 6 months. It's really a proof of concept phase. So I developed a prototype based on what the target audience and scientific literature told me. Then we went back to the Arlington County, Virginia, STD clinic, and we recruited 18 women to actually use the program, to look at it, tell us what they think. There were 10 African-American women, 3 Latinas, and 5 white women. We also talked to 12 STD clinic directors around the country. Some were rather big, with 30 HIV education counselors. Some were as small as 4. It was skewed towards urban centers. 8 were in urban centers, Boston, Atlanta, Chicago, compared to rural. And what we found is that, for the most part, women really liked what we were doing, the women, at least in the focus groups. This is a scale from 1 to 5, 5 being extremely. So how much did you like the program? 4, 6, 7. You can read the questions. Bottom line is it's all about 4.5. It was easy to use. It was interesting. It was clear. They really liked the personalized feedback. When it's fully developed, they would like to use it, and they also thought it would be helpful. When we talked to clinic directors, we said, well, here's the program we're developing. Do you think it could be helpful? 4.5, they thought it could be extremely helpful. They would like to have access to it. And then a key question is, well, could you actually incorporate this into your center? And most thought that they could. So we're actually now in Phase 2. NIDA has funded the Phase 2. And for the Phase 1, a majority of the content was on the assessment and the feedback. What we're going to do in Phase 2 is really beef up the what we call the strategies that work section. The first subsection of that will be mostly focusing on increasing the user's understanding of the symptoms, methods of transmission, and treatment. The second section, which is really the kind of the core, is that's where they'll get the personalized risk reduction plan. So, for instance, when you take the assessment and you say, I have no casual partners, then all the assessment, that it essentially turns into this huge decision tree. So each person will get a different program depending on what she says. So if she says, I have no paying partners and I have no casual partners, then the program will be dedicated to increasing consistent condom use in a steady partnership, which is much different than in a casual partnership. So it's a very, hopefully, organic and personalized program. And then, of course, it'll be infused with all kinds of fancy multimedia. Now, if I can figure out how to do this, which I think I can show you briefly. We probably have like 1 minute or so. One of the things that the women told me, well, I'll show it to you.
There's been a time in the history of our country when women have played a more decisive role than now. And I'm not just talking about some women. I'm talking about all women across all races and ethnicities. We're leaders in government and industry. We're activists bringing about social and political change. We're artists leading a cultural revolution. At the same time we're making huge strides in society, we're not making the same progress in our own personal lives. Many of us can't talk to our men about abstinence, faithfulness, or using condoms. We don't know if they're doing things that put us at risk. Many of us are too scared to say no to sex because this may lead to physical violence or loss of economic support. Empowering ourselves in relationships is what this program is all about. It's about making healthy choices for you and the ones you love. If you want to learn more and join a community of safe sisters, click start. It may be one of the most important things you'll ever do.
So the reason why I just showed you that, how I envision this starting and how it ends up starting is completely different. The women told me, you've got to talk about community, you've got to talk about healthy choices, you have to talk about relationships, which I hadn't actually realized. But through talking to the target audience, it really sort of shaped the program. The other example that I want to show you is, what the hell are these? I actually don't know. This is where talking to your software people makes a difference. I said, well, I want something that sort of draws the attention, and then when you mouse over it, it gives you a little fact. I don't know if you could tell me what that is. I know the women in the focus group thought it was either condoms or floating vaginas, which it's actually neither. It sort of shows you, and then what this does is it gives them sort of an inspirational message to enter the program. And I'll stop right there. Oh, I got out of it too. Look at that. I didn't screw it. Look at that. I didn't screw everything up. Thank you, everyone.